Welcome to Out of Rotation, volleyball talk for players, coaches, and fans. Presented by the American Volleyball Network. Here's your host, Dan Meskin.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. We got a special episode today. We're in the beginning of August. It's very close to everybody's start of their season. So we're going to go through a preseason checklist with our co-host, John Klanick, associate head coach, Rice University. Johnny, how you doing?
Doing well. Good to be back.
Love having you back. So before we get into this preseason checklist, because I want to make this a podcast that's very informative for college coaches, college players, fans that are intrigued by how we approach season, I actually want to kind of do one quick kind of tangent. I was working at camp and I had our youngest listener that I've met come up to me. She was, I think, a 12-year-old camper and said, I love the podcast. And it was just really cool. It was the youngest person that had come up to me and talked about the podcast. And then she followed up with a question. I wanted to address it. So she talked about she's moving into high school season and she doesn't totally vibe with her high school coach. So I got the feeling that maybe the high school coach is a little bit of a yeller and maybe she doesn't respond to that. And she was asking me for my advice on how to handle that. And so I gave her the best that I could. I kind of told her about, you know, most coaches probably think that they're approaching things in the correct way. So if you go up and try and challenge that, it's usually a difficult conversation. So I think for a 12-year-old, that's a lot. But for you, John, I know you've had a lot of high-level club experience, different experiences than me. You know, what's been your experience with either players giving you some feedback on your coaching style or how they want to be coached, or what would just be your advice for a player that is entering season and maybe doesn't vibe with their coach?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one I actually thought about for quite some time. I don't have experience from it with players of my own, and I hope I never have fallen into that situation. But I think back to my times as a player and what I would do if I was ever in that situation. And I think it's just about taking the higher road. You're your own self, try to be the best version of yourself. So you're taking the higher road, although it might not work for you, you kind of got to look past that, and take any information as constructive almost. They might not relay that information the best way possible, but understand that they probably are in your corner and they mean the best for you.
Yeah. No, I think that's really good. As you were talking through that, it got me thinking, you know, in those situations when you do feel like, I don't want to be coached this way, or I feel like this coaching style is incorrect or wrong. Like you said, taking the high road and saying thank you for the feedback and just, again, really controlling your reaction to things. I think sometimes we struggle to do that because we feel like then the coach wins or we're validating that type of behavior. But I think if you can take the high road and, you know, again, you don't maybe agree with the feedback, but you say, hey, thank you, I'm going to work on that. I think that is an internal win because we didn't let this outside force kind of affect us. So I hope that helps. I'm sure that's not the only person who's entering a season that's like, oh no, I've got a different coach than club, or I've got a new coach this year in grade school or high school, and maybe I don't vibe with them. But there's always an opportunity for leadership or for growth and learning in those situations. So with that, let's get right into our checklist, because like I said, I want to make this a really informative podcast and maybe something that people can listen to as their seasons are about to start or they're in the middle of two-a-days. So let's jump right into it. So I want to get right into the volleyball side of things. So Johnny, hit me with one thing that Rice University and you in particular, one major skill that you guys are really focused on in the preseason leading into this year.
Cool. Two things. I want to backtrack one. Going into preseason for us, I've always been big on just creating good habits or breaking bad habits for whatever skill it might be. So that first week that we go into, a little bit of the second week too, like we want to make sure we're going in and we're kind of breaking down the fundamentals, making sure we're our serve receive, how we want to pass the ball, approach work, speed and all that stuff. We want to make sure we're developing the good habits or kind of fine tuning those things. So that's how we start. Secondly, I think it's going to be an integration of the new players. So we have a few freshmen coming in. We were fortunate enough to have that training time for the Brazil block, but you know, it was only 2 weeks or 10 days. So we need to integrate them a little bit more. So we'll go over the handbook of what kind of offense we want to run, defense, block schemes. And then more technically, I think the biggest emphasis going off of last year that I would like to see improvement on is going to be just serve receive patterns and how we receive the ball, working on tougher serves in specific zones where that serve is coming from. Talking to you and some other coaches in volleyball, taking that ball from zone five and what kind of move we're making. Are we taking on a right side, left side? I feel like that's been a huge topic lately.
Do you guys do the left is right, right is wrong thing? I've heard that for years and we've never like fully bought in. Are you guys in on that now or what's the deal?
I don't think we're fully bought in. I think less is more in serve receive. If we want simple moves to get to the ball and just put your platform in the best position to create an angle. So for me personally, it's whatever gets the job done. You know, yeah. if you're there and you take a ball a little bit wide, but your platform is good, by all means. But ideally, you know, you want good footwork, feet to the ball, especially that zone five to zone one. We want to probably, that's my thought on it, is kind of taking that off your right knee a little bit more.
And I mean, pretty advanced kind of volleyball stuff we were talking about there. So if anybody was a little bit clueless on what we were talking about, the left is right, right is wrong. You know, I heard that a long time ago. I feel like it originated with Carl McGowan and BYU and Gold Medal Squared and all that. They did a big study that the best passes typically came off of passers' left hip. So then they came up with this term of left is right, right is wrong. So we don't want to take balls off of our right hip when we pass. Same thing. I've heard that for over 10 years, and I still have never been like, yeah, I love that, or no, that's completely wrong. I still am very curious about it. Two things you touched on I really want to follow up with. The first one is the handbook, and I don't want to go too deep with the handbook, but how long is your handbook?
Not very long at all. It covers what we need to in terms of rules and guidelines. We'll throw some offensive schemes in there, some defensive schemes, how we want it done, and schedules, things like that.
How many pages?
Probably five, six.
Nice.
Not many.
Ours is like eight, yeah. And I thought that was really short. So I, over the years, I've really bought in on the fact that the handbook should be as concise and as short as possible. Plus the fact I have to put them together every year, so that's why they've gotten shorter every year. I was like sick of doing 16-page handbooks that have like a leadership, you know, page and a whatever. And it's like if we want to do those extra handouts, we can do those as they come, but we tried to get everything in there at the beginning of the year and it was driving me nuts. So, you know, you touched on the ones.
I go back to like film, and when you show film to your team and how long the film should be, I feel like the handbook or anything that's on paper like that should be concise as well. You know, they say players typically pay attention for the first 10, 15 minutes of film, and anything longer than that, they start to lose focus a little bit. I mean, it's kind of the same.
Yeah, if that. I mean, 10 minutes seems like a lot. And you said earlier, less is more. I was like, that applies to everything. That's our coaching feedback that you were talking about, serve-receive in particular. But, I mean, everything that we do seems like less is more. So, all right, Johnny. So, next question, two-a-days. We're going into two-a-days. I remember talking with you on the Brazil podcast about how you structured two-a-days. So, that was in preparation for a foreign tour. Now we're in preparation for our fall season. Talk to me about how you guys structure two-a-days.
First, second week, we'll build a calendar. Jenny does a great job of building a calendar and making sure everything is in there. And we kind of work backwards in that sense. So everything to the max will be in there, and then we'll kind of take away things as they go. So whether it's two practices every day, and then we'll just be like, let's take this one out. It's a good day to recover. Let's take this one out. Let's do a team bonding activity. So that's kind of how it works in terms of actually building those 2 weeks of preseason. After that, I mean, in terms of planning the practices, we work a lot with our strength coach, Dallas Skipper, who's really been into
what
the
a great strength coach
of,
name. Did you say his name's Dallas Skipper?
Her name is Dallas.
Her.
Skipper,
oh
yeah.
My God. That's a great name.
Yeah. She does a great job with the sports science side of it, in the weight room. So we work with her pretty much every day, and just kind of figuring out how they did in the weight room. If they went heavy, then we need to adjust here, or maybe they went lighter, we should adjust here. So that's a good way of making sure we're getting the most out of the players at practices. I've always been big on, and I've always trained, you know, if we're going 2 days, morning sessions, a lot of serve and pass, you know, not a lot of jumping at all. You go an hour, hour and a half, you get in, like I said, start from the basics, create the good habits, and you move on from there. And then the afternoons, you kind of get after a little bit more. That thinking has kind of changed, especially since I've been at Rice and kind of seen the sports science side of it. little bit beyond me, but Dallas is great of just tracking that and relaying that information to us.
Yeah, I think that's good. So we're pretty similar. So we go typically like a 2-2-1, 2-2-1 off. So we'll go, you know, two-a-days, then one practice, two-a-days, one practice, and then that seventh day is usually off. But same thing like you, we've got a couple practices scheduled in there where it's like in the morning, if, you know, we can tell that the girls are kind of dragging or, you know, maybe we don't have as much availability as we thought with our roster, you know, we'll go grab brunch or we'll do something kind of fun. So
what's been a focus for you guys?
So I think every year is serving. So, I mean, serving continues to evolve. And you touched on really quickly, like, serving from zone five and how effective that has been. And I don't think that that's the answer for everybody, but I do think, like, every server should explore why they're serving from where they're serving from and why they're serving to where they're serving to. And I'm always really intrigued by, like, middles in particular because I coach the middles. But, like, middles have sometimes gone from our worst servers to our best servers in under a year. And it's just kind of empowering them to try new things and try, you know, try different things. Anna DeBeer, for example, if you watch our Final Four match against Pitt, in game five, she comes out and serves, I think, the first nine balls. Well, when she got to Louisville, she had a completely different serve. She was trying a standing float, a one-footed float. We finally got her on a two-foot kind of traditional-looking jump float, but she missed forever. And it just felt like we were really exploring. And had we had the thought of like, hey, you're at Louisville now and this is how we serve, I don't think we ever would have found this serve that she has right now. So, you know, with all skills, I think we're really trying to explore and walk down the road with the player. But in particular, serving is always just so creative and like, we don't know what our best server is going to look like. Like, we're going to find out what that might be. So we're always really, really focused on that serve. So.
Are you guys doing anything cool or different that works on that?
No, we've tried everything that I'm sure everybody's trying a version of everything we've tried. So it's like, you know, we've done radar guns, then we've gotten away mm-hmm. from radar guns and only tried to do it to like live passers, and we've tried everything. We've got a couple different like target type style drills that we do where, you know, you can move the targets or try to move the targets back and skip the ball into the targets. Todd Chamberlain, he brought a lot of interesting serving things. He runs our serving in games. He brought a lot of interesting kind of serving challenges of like one that I really like is it's called a skip out. And so that you have players pay attention to the path of their ball after it lands, as opposed to just like a lot of times we'll just look at kind of the contact and does it float till it gets to the net. And then we don't think so much about that like after the fact. And for him, it's like, can you get a ball to bounce in the court and then break the sideline? So like you typically have to do it cross court, like 5-5 or 1-1, but it really gets you thinking about like the angles. Like it's a kind of a hard angle to hit where you can serve, let's say 5-5, for example, you can serve zone 5-5 and the ball can go out the baseline, but then you can really get on it. You have to drop it a little bit and then the ball will break the sideline. And that's what we call a skip out. So it's like, it still would go to the same zone, but just thinking more about the path of the ball after the serve is finished, especially if you don't have passers there, I think is really interesting. So we explore a lot of different challenges of like, can you get the ball to do this? And if you can do that, then it's going to, you know, increase your serve. But at the end of the day, we're just trying to get bad passes out of the other team. So however we do that, but
absolutely.
Well, hey, back at you. So let's go. I want to stay on the team side of things. So from a team bonding standpoint, this is one of those things that, you know, in my early career, we used to have a schedule of like these things were on the schedule of like we are going to do this activity and then we're going to do that. And we've personally gone away from that where like our team bonding kind of happens organically. And like I said, maybe we cancel a practice and go do something. We've kind of gone away from keeping our girls at the gym past about 6 o'clock or 6:30 with dinner and all that. They're kind of checked out by then. We don't try to do film after that or anything. What do you guys have planned or what do you guys try to just set up for the team as far as team bonding goes before school starts up?
For us, we kind of take the same thinking as you guys, especially, you know, the longer that I've been around, we have some, our relationships are pretty organic, like you said. They're just good friends. Everybody's best friends on the court, off the court. They get after it on the court. So there's not really any worries there. So again, our thinking is probably if they have some time off, we want them to kind of capitalize it on their own. If that's recovery, whatever it is, because you know they're going to get dinner together, whatever, hang out outside the gym anyways. In terms of what we do you have when we're in season and we have structured team bonding activities? I mean, there's always going to be meals. Like we always eat together. That's staff, that's players, that's everybody kind of included. This year we're going to do a self-defense class. I think is
nice.
Is going to be pretty cool. Just something a little bit different. I will be participating in that. We always do, like, you know, we'll mix up like the Zumba workouts every now and then. You pull out the TV and get that kind of warm up in. And that's always good for a good laugh. So,
you know what I want to bring? You just motivated me. I just did a camp 2 years ago down there in Houston, and they did a warm up with that, like, dance. Was it Dance Dance Revolution? Or you know what I'm talking about? It's where you have a big screen and the dude is dancing and you have to kind of like mimic it. What is that called?
I think it is Dance Dance Revolution, DDR.
Okay. And you can like YouTube a video.
But we did like a Zumba class. Yeah. You can, it's a video and you just do the dance. We did, Jenny brought in like a Zumba class and put it on the TV and we all did it as just like a fun warm up in the spring. And those are just fun because everybody gets to be a little goofy and
I'm going to bring that back. I'm going to bring that back from Texas. The other thing these don't really warm you up or anything like that. That's kind of a warm up game that you can do where you're dancing and you're moving. But for a while there, this was a few years back. I want to bring this back too. We were really working on like the competitive muscle. Like there's definitely some coaches out there or some teams that are like, man, we just need to like compete harder. And we've had that in years past where it's like, man, like sometimes it feels like we're trying our best. But it also feels like, man, it's just we're not competing at 100. We're competing at like 99 or, you know what I mean? There's a little left. So we did a bunch of minute to win it's and we wanted everybody to enter the gym knowing they're going to compete. So we would do, you know, you Google any of those minute to win it's and just see who's competitive and who can win it. And then we would do team games. And the one that sticks out to me is we did a big water pong tournament. So we did literally we set up water pong. And like the last shot was like Danny versus, I think it was like Rachel DeMarcus, one of our setters back in the day. And the place just like erupted. But like those things, I mean, that probably took like 4 minutes, you know? And it's like a core memory. Like I still remember that vividly. I have no idea what we did at that practice, but that's definitely motivated me to like write some of these down and bring them back. And I think for coaches entering two-a-days, it's like if you're not doing something like that every like third or fourth day, it can get really mundane really quick. So anyways.
We've done a few like spike ball tournaments, you know, that's more like, it's going to be more warm up. Like we do that in season two and just instead of using spike ball courts, we'll use like blocking boxes. And so they can use a volleyball actually on that. Again, just to get the competitive juices flowing a little bit. I like that though. I like the water.
Well, let's keep on the team side of things. So from a scheduling standpoint, we don't have to go through both of our preseasons, but talk to me a little bit about how Rice kind of attacks scheduling preseason, because from an RPI standpoint, for those that are fans of NCAA or coaches that have worked on scheduling, the best advice I ever got from scheduling was when I was at a Division II and a coach in our conference said, you know, schedule every match that you think you can win, but schedule as hard as you possibly can. And I thought that was like really good advice because at some points, maybe you're in the middle of the conference and you're like, you don't need to be playing the team that's winning another conference, but you need to be playing somebody who's getting second or third. Like, yeah, we have to play great to beat them, but we feel like we have a chance to win every match. So I always remember that advice of like schedule as hard as you possibly can with the intention that you can win every match. So I always take that and apply that to the way that we schedule. What's your guys' kind of thought on just either RPI? Because you guys are in a little different mix where for us, you know, we've gotten four or five bids, you know, in our conference. You guys are getting about two. So your out of conference scheduling seems to be really important.
Yeah, we've typically been in, you know, making the move to the American. We'll kind of see what happens because that's a brand new thing for us. But in Conference USA, we've always been like a 1-2 team bid. So, you know, we have the same thinking in terms of where we schedule with games that are going to be tough and we feel like we can win, but they're going to push us too. So every game that we schedule for the preseason, we're thinking, okay, this is a good game that we can win and it's going to test us really hard. So we're scheduling tough to push us early as possible. And then once conference play, you know, we can just kind of get after a little bit more. But yeah, for us, we want those high RPI teams. I think in some years past, we've been the team that bigger schools want to play. And we fully embrace that. I think we just kind of always had that underdog mentality in terms of that. We've always wanted to play the bigger schools and that's kind of what put us on the map a little bit. But yeah, we schedule tough to push us early. So, if we grab a couple of those wins, like that's perfect for us and sets us up when the RPI comes out. But yeah, we'll have SC coming in to Houston. Stanford's going to come to Houston. We're going to go to Baylor. We're going to go to Texas. We're going to go to Kansas State. Host a couple of tournaments here too, but we make sure Jenny does a great job when she schedules, just making sure high quality matches that will test us and give us that experience early, get us ready, you know, a little postseason in the preseason, if that makes sense.
Love it. Yeah. And it reminded me, too, we've got a deal in the works to potentially play each other starting not this season but next. But I don't think all the T's have been crossed and the lowercase J's have been dotted yet. So until it is, we won't announce it yet on this podcast. But hopefully we'll be playing each other. We'll announce those other two teams. Maybe when we do our podcast at the end of the season, we'll have all those contracts signed and everything. There's a potential for a Rice. Man, we should do like a post-game podcast if we do play each other, not this season but next. So maybe get all like
one's gonna be angry, one's gonna be happy.
Well, speaking of prep though, so you guys, you know, went head to head every year in the CUSA Conference USA against Western Kentucky. It felt like, I mean, ever since I can remember, it was like you two were at the top. You know, you would split in season, and then someone would win that conference tournament. So, what does your prep look like so that it's not? Because I would think you're very heavy prepping for that match in particular in past years. Like, you have to get good with the two ball. You know, Western Kentucky, for people who don't know, has a very unique offense. Even when we would have them on the schedule, we would work in some of their tendencies in our two-a-days, even if we're playing them a month later, because they're so unique. So now, I don't even think you have them on the schedule, so you have a completely different conference. How does your prep change in two-a-days? Did you ever address that stuff in two-a-days, or was it more of the week of the opponent you were going to be prepping? How does that change with you guys entering a new conference?
I think Western was always in the back of our mind in matches when we were in Conference USA. This year looks different just because of the change of conferences. But for the most part, our game plan and going into matches were that week type of thing. So, like I said, always Western in the back of your mind. Hey, that you know, we got that two ball going on, playing fast to the pins. How are we going to start working on that, looking at it a little bit more? Definitely on a film side for sure. But other than that, it's just business as usual. You know, we never want to overlook an opponent by looking at Western. So we make sure we put ourselves in the best situation that week. So we start game planning for just the following opponent. And then once the Western week came along, like, we get after a little bit. So, you know, a little bit of thought goes into it for sure. It's always in the back of your mind, especially from a coaching standpoint. But we never really want the players to focus on it that much.
Yeah, we'll sprinkle in a little bit of like this year, for example, we have Stanford is a big match at the Yum Center, but it's like the fourth week. So it's the end of preseason. We've got 10 matches before that. But I'm sure just with like how physical they are, sometime in two-a-days, because in two-a-days, you don't have that match at the end of the week to work towards. So maybe on like a Wednesday, right, we're going to be like, all right, we're going to play Stanford here. We're not going to give you tendencies. We're not going to give you any of that. We're just going to put really physical players on the other side and play as hard as we absolutely can, try to hit over you a little bit. So I know we'll sprinkle some of that stuff in, but like you said, that's a really fine line if you're getting close to actual season and you're talking about an opponent that's, you know, 2 weeks away and you've got somebody on Friday who, you know, maybe the girls expect to beat, but you know is going to be a tough match. So that is a really fine line to go through. But I do remember having Western on the schedule a couple of years ago, and in two-a-days, we were like, all right, we're going to prep against two balls right now. We don't play them for 3 weeks, but it's like we need to have, you know, in 3 weeks, this shouldn't be the first time that we've talked about defending this because it's so unique. So anyways, last team
just question. Just good to see it too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, it's just so different. It's like most teams are running a pretty traditional or very similar offense, just with small nuances. So it's like even playing yourself, you're preparing for other opponents. But if you play a team like that, I mean, that is, we don't ever run two balls with our middles ever. So it's like we don't ever get to prep that when we play ourselves. So yeah, you have to work that stuff in if you have an opponent who runs something completely different. So let's stay on the team side of things. Last kind of team question entering preseason. Leadership, kind of leadership, thoughts for leadership moving into season, and then captains in particular. How do you guys go about captains? What are you guys doing to develop leadership in your program?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of experienced all sides of that and how you bring that about. I remember like when we play, we kind of as players voted on a team captain, two team captains, whatever it is.
Yeah, I didn't get captain my senior year when you were a freshman. Did you vote for me? Because I was kind of bitter about that.
Come on. You know I did. But here at Rice, was Jenny introduced a pod style system in terms of leadership. So we don't have captains. Our court captains are always going to be our setters. But the setter that's on the court is going to be the floor captain. But we do a pod system, which is just different kind of pockets of things that we want people to have accountability in. So we have like an equipment pod, a fashion pod, a food pod, a social media pod, locker room. I mean, it changes year after year. And you're basically, we'll split the team up and we'll put them in those pods. So they have those responsibilities for, you know, for the fall or whatever it is, however we divvy it up. So an example, like food pod is in charge of everything on the road. What meals do you guys want to eat? You guys figure it out. You work together to figure it out as a team. There'll be three or four players that are on that pod to kind of figure it out. Locker room pod, making sure everything's clean. Equipment pod, choosing who's wearing what. What are we wearing on road matches? What are we, you know, what are we traveling in? I've always thought that was pretty cool because it kind of pushes that responsibility and accountability to everybody. And it's kind of constructive for everybody, you know. It's good, you know, skills that everybody needs rather than just kind of putting it on one or two people to be like, hey, we got to do this, we got to do this, you know. So it's skills, you know, they develop and will be good for them for the rest of their life too.
So in these pods, let's say, well, I have two questions on the pods. One is, what's like the most, like, I almost don't want to be in that pod because there's so much riding on it. Like, you talked about food. Like, I feel like food on the road is a big deal. Like, they picked like the wrong one. People are pretty pissed. Like, what's the pod that has the most just kind of pressure on them to succeed?
That's a good question. I would say food pod. And I was always the one, like the coaches, last year I was doing the food for the team. So I was kind of running the show with the food pod, and they're like, okay, here are the options. Let's talk it over with the team. And so there's always kind of go back and forth, and they'll finally come to an answer. And to me, I'm like, I love to eat. I don't care what you guys pick. I'll be happy with whatever. But food pod probably is the most, because it's road trips. It's what you're eating the most often, kind of figuring it out and everything.
We last year, I don't want to throw this city under the bus or what team this was that we were playing, but there was no good food options. And we ended up at a place called Spaghetti Warehouse, which is like, you know, Men's Warehouse, like suits. Like it was like the worst meal. I remember Todd Chamberlain, our assistant, got the sampler and it came out and it was like all the stuff they had. It had like a little toothpick with an Italian flag in it. And it was like, we talked about Spaghetti Warehouse for like, we still do. We were talking about it last week. So I feel like food pod has a lot of responsibility. But more seriously on these pods.
How do you guys do it?
So our director of ops has that responsibility, but then like our head coach, Danny Busboom Kelly, is a huge foodie, and she has incurable FOMO. So fear of missing out. So like we will have like ordered food somewhere, and she will be on her phone looking at Yelp and be like, oh, there's a 5-star, like, you know, two blocks away or whatever. So it's like, there is so much pressure on picking a good restaurant. But the one really cool thing about our program is that like our players are really open to trying new things. So it's like, we can go to like a sushi place, or we can go to like, you know, try like, you know, some type of like Vietnamese food or whatever it might be. And our team's pretty open to it, especially if it's like got a good review on Yelp. And we always try to do something like kind of local. But if we end up in like kind of a podunk town or whatever you want to call it, and you've got a Spaghetti Warehouse, you just kind of have to deal with it. But then we're talking about it after. So the food thing is a big deal. I think there's a lot of different ways to do it. My last thing on the pods, because I bet there's some people that are really curious or exploring maybe doing something like this. So like what happens if like the locker room pod, I was intrigued by that. Let's say the locker room is like a mess. You have a recruit coming in and then the locker room is like trashed, or there's stuff everywhere. Locker room pod, you guys are in charge of that. You guys missed the boat on that. How do you guys deal with that? Is that they just kind of have a coach that's in charge of them and they'll deal with it internally? Or is there something standardized of like, hey, this pod, you know, missed out on this, and then this is kind of the I wouldn't say the punishment for that, but this is the consequence of what happened.
Thankfully, we've never really been in that situation. And that's a really good question. And I guess I consider myself lucky. As a staff, we consider ourselves lucky. Is the team does take it very serious, the pods that they're in. So we've never really had an incident. Like if the locker room is dirty and we say, hey, we got to get this cleaned up, we got somebody like a recruit coming in, they're on it, because that is, again, part of it and their responsibility of taking ownership of what they're in. And the pods always rotate too. So it's never, you're never in the same pod for your whole time. You are whatever pods that we have for the year, you'll be rotated into those. So you're getting a little dose of everything. But yeah, thankfully we've never been in a situation where we've not completed something.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people would describe your guys' culture as really good. And I think people would say probably the same thing about Louisville. And I get asked that question sometimes too. I get asked it a lot more specifically sometimes of like, how do you deal with a trouble player or you know, somebody who has red flags or is mean to their teammates or doesn't want to bond with their teammates. And we're like, we haven't dealt with that. But it's also like we haven't dealt with that because we don't really tolerate that. Like there is a standard set and you live up to the standard and you work within the way that our culture is. Or, you know, hopefully we don't recruit a player like that. But if we do, you make that adjustment or it just ends up not working out. So a lot of times the answer is like, man, I wish I had a better answer for you. But also the fact that you're asking that question sometimes is you're enabling that behavior. You're allowing that to be something that exists in your world. So not that those aren't hard to do, but it's just like you have to have your standard set and you have to hold people to it. And then, you know, you don't have the specific, oh yeah, when that happens, here's the consequence, because we've had it happen five times. It's like if it happens five times, you probably don't have the right kind of rhythms in place to like function properly. So I think it's kind
of— Yeah, I would agree. I think if it's happening even once or multiple times, then it's probably on myself or the staff that's in place to kind of take a step back and be like, that's probably on me because I haven't really established, you know, what I was looking for and what I wanted done. So I need to take responsibility. So I agree. It's kind of like a culture thing within each program. And we've been lucky to have players and alumni that have been through that have kind of established that culture and the foundation that Jenny's kind of put in place here that, you know, you come in and this is your responsibility. You own that responsibility and you take accountability to it. And if you don't, you know, there'll be something, but we never run into that. So I'm grateful for that.
I love it. So what is your conference? So you said you're going to AAC. Are they on ESPN Plus or where can I find you guys?
I believe we'll be on ESPN Plus and probably the conference website. They'll always stream the games too.
I love, for people that don't have it, like ESPN Plus, I think you can get it wrapped up with Disney Plus and Hulu for like $15 a month or something. And I held off on it for a while because it was just ESPN Plus, I think, on its own. It was like $10 a month. And I was like, I don't watch enough. And then when I finally got it, I couldn't believe how many matches I would watch from a bunch of different conferences. So I learned a lot more. And that's one of my favorite things is like the feeling of like our weekend is done. Like let's say we play a Friday, Saturday, and then there's matches on Sunday and I don't have to prep for them and I don't have to like warm the team up and I don't have to do anything. I can just sit on my couch and watch another match is one of my favorite feelings in season because it's just like you're not stressed, but there's just a level of whatever it is when you're involved and your week is not over. And your week really isn't ever over. Like you get a quick little reset and then you're going to your next opponent. But man, do I love watching like ESPN Plus. I'll look at all these matches and just see what's live. And I in particular love the preseason. I love watching like a Power 5 team play like, you know, a team from another conference and then you get there and it's 1-1 and you're kind of watching through. I love that. So I'll be watching a lot more of you guys on ESPN Plus. For everybody listening, appreciate you guys. Good luck with your seasons. I hope you guys have all the goals and everything that you want to get out of your season. And we'll look forward to talking to you guys again in December, John and I. So John, signing off. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks for listening to Out of Rotation with your host, Dan Meske, presented by the American Volleyball Network. Until next time, come on. Don't give them any free points. Always stay in rotation.